Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, took to the Senate floor on Tuesday and accused the CIA of spying on the Senate, of removing documents from Senate computers, of trying to obstruct, intimidate a Senate Intelligence Committee report on torture, and more fundamentally, of breaching the separation of powers at the heart of the Constitution. All this from a senator who has been one of the staunchest defenders of U.S. intelligence agencies. The CIA denies her charge and accuses the Senate of spying on them. This hour on Point, the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA draw swords. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Can you believe this standoff? Are there still boundaries on American spying? Should this be one? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Dianne Feinstein has been absolutely resolute in her support of U.S. intelligence agencies at many points and on many fronts. But her committee looking into enhanced interrogation or torture is really into it with the CIA now. She came on the Senate floor on Tuesday, talked about this as a defining moment for congressional oversight of American intelligence operations.
The recent actions that I have just laid out make this a defining moment for the oversight of our intelligence committee. How Congress and how this will be resolved will show whether the intelligence committee can be effective in monitoring and investigating our nation's intelligence activities, or whether our work can be thwarted by those we oversee.
A big question, given the scale of intelligence Americans have been made aware of, intelligence gathering in the last months and year. Joining me now from Washington is Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent for the New York Times. He's done breakthrough reporting on this battle royal. Mark Mazzetti, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
What set Dianne Feinstein off? What is at the heart of this confrontation?
Well, it's as you said, it was a pretty extraordinary moment the other day. It's really years in the making. The committee, Senate Intelligence Committee, has been working on this report for several years, trying to document effectively the history of the CIA now defunct detention and interrogation program. They completed the report a year ago.
This is the program set up after 9/11. It ended up having this network of secret prisons all over the world, Thailand, Romania, Lithuania. This is the program accused of, in many quarters, of torture.
That's correct. It's the CIA set it up after 9/11 and operated it effectively till around 2006, mm-hmm. when President Bush moved the CIA prisoners to Guantanamo Bay. But really, it didn't officially shut down until the beginning of the Obama administration, when President Obama signed an executive order officially ending the program. But that's really when this fight began, because it was then a fight over the history. Who tells the history? Who owns the history? And so Senator Feinstein's committee has been at work on this, what grew to be a 6,300-page report on the history of this program. They, for intents and purposes, completed it last year. But since then, there has been this back and forth with the CIA over the conclusions in the report and the facts in the report. And we have not seen any of it because it's all still classified. And so what led Senator Feinstein to take the floor on Tuesday was being sort of at a breaking point in this battle with the CIA. And it really escalated in the last couple weeks, where Senator Feinstein learned from the CIA director John Brennan that the CIA had monitored the computers that the committee had been using at a CIA facility out in Northern Virginia.
Now, explain that. The Senate Intelligence Committee dug in this basement office with CIA cooperation. They put it on a separate computer system, not supposedly linked into the central CIA computers, where they could go through millions of pages of documents, including an internal CIA report, the so-called Panetta report, which seems to be kind of at the heart of the standoff, Mark.
That's correct. So the deal was cut in 2009 between Feinstein and then CIA Director Leon Panetta to do this arrangement where the committee would go to this CIA facility, work in this basement, as I've described it, windowless basement called the Electronic Reading Room. And from there, they would pore over what became millions of documents in order to write their report. The documents came in, and the staff over several years started reading them. Now, what is at the heart, as you said, of this is this so-called Panetta Review, which is a internal CIA set of documents, sort of set of memos, that Senator Feinstein says effectively bolster the conclusions in her committee's report.
That Leon Panetta, when he was head of the CIA, asked for this to be prepared. It was prepared. They got access to it somehow, and that's part of the question too.
Right. So when the CIA gave all these documents to the committee, Panetta said, well, we should get a handle on what we're giving to the committee. So he ordered his own review to basically summarize the documents as they were going to the committee. Mm-hmm. Now, the real key question here is how did the Senate Intelligence Committee get access to this Panetta review? The CIA said it never intended to give the committee the review because it was outside the time frame of the documents that that were part of the deal, as well as it was something that was only meant for internal use, probably covered under executive privilege. But the committee, Senator Feinstein said Tuesday, listen, this Panetta review showed up in the massive document dump that happened in 2009, 2010. So we did a search and we came up with the document. It's ours. So that, you're right. It's at the sort of center of the dispute, and it's still a little bit of a he said, she said about how the committee got a hold of this document.
Why would the CIA, Mark, be so sensitive about the Panetta review, their own internal review of the messages, the documents that they were going to let the Senate Intelligence Committee look at anyway?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, why would this be something that they wouldn't have wanted the committee to have in the first place? Now, you've heard in recent days Leon Panetta and as well as some of his former staff downplaying the significance of this. They tried to say it wasn't an official report. It was sort of this cursory look at documents.
But you report and others that the Panetta report has scathing sort of self-examination by the CIA. Very,
yes.
Very tough analysis of what went on, saying this was wrong. This torture was brutal and it didn't work. In the CIA's own words, which I get is kind of a, I don't know, smoking gun or something for the Intelligence Committee.
You know, what our understanding is of this Panetta report is inside these summaries, you see analysis by the people reading the documents that sort of say, you know, a lot of these interrogation techniques didn't work. We the CRA may have overstated the value of these techniques. And so, as you say, it's in the CIA's own words. And that's really the heart of the fight is, did this program have any value? Or as the Senate is now alleging, not only did it not have value, and it was torture, but the CIA was lying throughout the entire time to the White House, to the American people, about how valuable it was.
So the Intelligence Committee then incorporates some of this Panetta review material in their report. Now you say it's still classified, which means I think the CIA is blocking its release of the Senate Intelligence Report, the oversight report here. And they've both gone to the Department of Justice. Are they both is each accusing the other of criminal activity here?
Yes, and I should just make one clarification. Senator Feinstein said Tuesday they did not incorporate the Panetta review into their document.
I don't mean in total, but aren't they citing it?
They are now citing this as evidence that they're right.
Yeah.
And what has now led to these criminal charges or at least referrals to the Justice Department is two different sort of accusations of spying. The CIA is claiming that the committee or committee staffers got unauthorized access to this document. And once they got unauthorized access to this Panetta review, they took it out of the CIA facility, and this may have constituted a crime.
Feinstein says if they took it out, it's because they were afraid the CIA would take it back or take it away.
Right. It was this extraordinary moment of her speech on Tuesday where she said, basically said, this document needed to be preserved. And the only way to preserve it was to take it and put it in a safe in the Hart Senate office building. And she cited the CIA's history of destroying records, most notably the 2005 decision to destroy tapes of,
interrogation.
Of some of these interrogations.
What's her charge or would be charged against the CIA?
So she's now basically citing that the CIA's own internal watchdog, the Inspector General, has done its own investigation about whether the monitoring of the computers used by her staff was unlawful, and whether not only is it a sort of breach of constitutional separation of powers, but it might actually constitute a crime under what's called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So you now have the CIA's Inspector General referring that case to the Justice Department. And at the same time, you have another part of the CIA referring to the Justice Department this issue of whether the committee staff broke the law by getting unauthorized access to this document.
And so the Senate Intelligence Committee is saying they're trying to intimidate us here to back us off.
Yeah, that's right. And she, another extraordinary moment of Tuesday, Senator Feinstein said that the person, the lawyer at CIA who referred this criminal charge about her staff is the same lawyer who is mentioned 1,600 times in their report and is someone who oversaw the detention interrogation program.
Let's just run through that again. The guy who oversaw detention interrogation and has 1,600 mentions in the report is now taking a case against the Intelligence Committee to the Department of Justice for criminal charges potentially.
As she said, that's a bit of a conflict of interest.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the CIA and the Senate Intelligence Committee at war over CIA interrogation, torture, and charges of spying on the Senate. Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent for The New York Times, is with us. Dianne Feinstein took to the Senate floor on Tuesday. Very shortly thereafter, CIA Director John Brennan told NBC News' Andrea Mitchell at a Council on Foreign Relations event that the agency did not snoop on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Let me assure you that CIA in no way was spying on the SSCI or the Senate. We greatly respect the separation of powers between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and we're going to do everything possible to work with the committee in the future on its report. And should they decide to submit that report to us for a classification review, if they want to put it out, we are eager to work with them to put this chapter behind us.
Eager to put it behind us. But that's not what Dianne Feinstein was saying a little earlier on the Senate floor. She said, grave concerns, separation of powers breached.
I have grave concerns that the CIA's search may well have violated the separation of powers principles embodied in the United States Constitution, including the speech and debate clause. It may have undermined the constitutional framework essential to effective congressional oversight of intelligence activities or any other government function.
Others went even further. Here's Lindsey Graham, Senator of South Carolina, saying this sounded like Nixon stuff.
If, in fact, the CIA, you know, hacked into the Senate Intelligence Committee's computers, this is incredibly serious Nixon stuff, and we need to do something about it. But you cannot allow an executive branch agency to hack into a oversight committee's computers to try to find out what kind of damning information may be coming out against you. That just goes to the heart and soul of our democracy. I don't know if it's true, but if it is, heads should roll.
To the heart and soul of our democracy, Nixon stuff. Mark Mazzetti, do some analysis for us here. We heard John Brennan there saying, head of the CIA, what, if they want to put this behind us, you know, we're eager to work with them. We can get this report out. Is there negotiation? Is this negotiation in public? You know, look, Dianne, we can go to the Department of Justice and bring criminal charges, or you can settle down. We can put out some redacted version of your report and let's get out of this.
Very much so. What we found was that over the last several months, both the committee and the CIA were trying to resolve this in private and work something out. And clearly that that didn't work out so well. And so now they're both kind of publicly negotiating over the future of this report. I think it's important to go back a little bit with the history, because Senator Graham mentioned Nixon, and just to point out that, you know, the intelligence committees didn't used to exist. They're really a creation of they were created in the 1970s after the Church Committee investigation that aired out all of the agency's dirty laundry from the first several decades of its existence. There really was no congressional oversight. So after the Church Committee in the mid-1970s, you had the House and Senate Intelligence Committees created to do this very job, to be able to get classified information and perform effective oversight over not only the CIA, but all the intelligence agencies. Now, as we found over time, sometimes this oversight is effective and sometimes it's not. Sometimes they get to the bottom of what the agencies are doing, and sometimes they are thwarted. And sometimes they are accused of effectively rubber stamping what the intelligence agencies have done. So there's really this, somewhat tortured history of congressional oversight in the intelligence committees. But it's just, I think, important to point out that it's still a sort of a relatively recent phenomenon in the last couple decades of having this oversight.
Our listeners are kind of agog at the sound spectacle of Dianne Feinstein complaining about this after she's been such a defender of the intelligence community. I mean, you know, here's Bob. This is comments online. Mark says, "Welcome to our world." Jeff says, "Oh, the irony of Feinstein complaining about the CIA spying on the legislators. Meanwhile, she completely defends the NSA spying on American citizens." Tom says, "If the Senate can't handle this invasion of their privacy, they shouldn't allow it to be used on all Americans." Adam, "Feinstein's relentlessly supported the security machine in the face of all opposition. What did she think would happen?" And then an interesting one from Liz here says, "Look, this isn't the executive branch. This is the shadow government. Get with the program. This is bigger than the executive branch." I mean, that irony must be felt in Washington. She has, as you say, been a big defender.
Oh, no question. And you're certainly hearing this in the last couple of days about how, the irony of Senator Feinstein raising this issue of monitoring when she so publicly defended and, of course, privately defended the NSA surveillance, some of the more controversial programs that were revealed last year by former contractor Edward Snowden. She has been a big defender not only of the surveillance, but of the CIA's use of targeted killings using drones. So, I mean, there are many people who are pointing out that, she is, there is some hypocrisy here. Now, your other listener pointed out this shadow government. It's an important point because the CIA, of course, is part of the executive branch.
Yes.
But we have not really heard much from the White House here. What exactly the White House wants? What is President Obama's role? They've been pretty quiet through this process. All Obama has said, and he said it again yesterday, is that he wants the report declassified. But he does not appear put much pressure on his CIA director, John Brennan, to get this done, to get the report out, to put this chapter behind
us. I mean, all that should take is a telephone call, isn't it, from the president? Declassify the report.
One would think that the CIA, that the president has authority over the CIA director. Yes, so the White House may say it's more complicated than that. But I do think it's interesting how largely silent the White House has been through this process. President Obama campaigned in 2007, 2008 against what he called illegal torture. He shut down the CIA program as one of his first acts as president. And yet, in this fight over the legacy and the history of the program, the White House has said very little.
Let's go right to the White House and look at the White House side of this. Josh, Mark Mazzetti with the New York Times, please stand by there in Washington. Josh Gerstein joins us now, senior White House reporter for Politico. Josh, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom, good to be with you again.
Where's the White House on this? Senator Feinstein is outraged. President Obama is quite close to John Brennan, director of the CIA. Is it clear how the White House is going to come down on this? Are they going to let these two go to war, go to the Justice Department, bring criminal charges against each other?
Well, I'm dubious that criminal charges in the end will ever come out of this, but it is tricky once that process gets underway to kind of stop it. It's easy to say that the White House needs to mediate a settlement to this, and that would seem, in a sense, logical. But at this point, there is a certain process. You know, there have been basically official referrals to the Justice Department with people saying, you know, we believe that these people committed a crime or may have committed a crime. And White Houses generally have been loath to step into the middle of that and tell the Justice Department, stop looking at something, stop looking at whether somebody might have broken the law. So I don't think that's likely to happen. But I do think the White House at this point, as Brennan has said and others have said, they do want to try to put this chapter behind them. What's tricky, as Mark has indicated, is it's not clear which of the various narratives here President Obama is going to endorse. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said that, you know, they wanted the facts out. They wanted the Senate to put out its report. They wanted the CIA to put out any response. If Senate Republicans had a different view than Feinstein, they could put out their response and we'd put this behind us. The problem with that is it seems to me people are going to ask which version of those accounts and which conclusions the president endorses. And even though the president's clearly aware of the different positions and has had access to these reports for probably a year or so now, there's no hint of where the president comes down on this issue or the issues that are raised by the Senate Intelligence Committee
Josh,
inquiry.
Why? Why that hesitation? I mean, at bottom, these reports are all about this interrogation program, secret prisons around the world, enhanced interrogation or torture. Barack Obama, Senator Obama, was one of the fiercest critics of that whole program. Why would he be hesitating now when the CIA's done an internal report, the Panetta report, the Senate Intelligence Committee has spent years going through these documents, they're ready to put it out. Why would this president hold that up?
Well, there's a couple reasons. One, the White House always tends to view this issue as a distraction. I think they viewed it this way in 2009. There were certain things they decided to do anyway to put out, for example, those legal memos from the Justice Department detailing how these programs and how these interrogations were supposed to work, what lawyers like John Yoo had authorized. What actually happened has never been really established on the public record.
Isn't this an important recent piece of American history that will set a precedent for heaven knows what going forward, one way or another?
Well, I think that's unquestionable that it's a very important part of the history. I think from a White House political perspective, though, when you have a legislative agenda that you're trying to push forward, when you're trying to do certain things related to immigration, related to the budget, related to getting your health care law implemented, these kinds of things look like a distraction. The other issue here is there are some in the intelligence community that feel that the president has not been as supportive of them as he should be. And it's very interesting also when you talk about John Brennan, for example, think about the really awkward position he's in here. Remember, he was considered to be CIA director back in 2009, and President Obama basically came close to offering them the job or did. And then the White House decided to go in another direction because there was concern that Brennan, who had worked at the CIA for a long career, like 20 years, and knew about the enhanced interrogation techniques, was briefed on the program, claims he objected to parts of it, but there's not a lot of record to support that. But that's what he says. The White House passed him over because it was thought he was basically too close to this history of torture. And now here he is with this report sitting on his desk trying to say, well, I didn't agree with some of these techniques, but the people that were involved were good people and their interests here have to be defended. Brennan has said that a couple of times in the recent days. So there are a lot of institutional interests and interests in these agencies, regardless of what people's overall views on this program are.
And it's his acting general counsel who's referred the matter to the Justice Department as a possible criminal offense. Here, Dianne Feinstein pointing out that that same acting general counsel was a lawyer in the Counterterrorism Center in this program. That attorney's name is in their report 1,600 times. She says, I've asked for an apology and haven't got it. Here she was on Tuesday in that remarkable 40-minute speech on the Senate floor.
I have asked for an apology and a recognition that this CIA search of computers used by its oversight committee was inappropriate. I have received neither.
They've spied on me. Brack in Lexington, Kentucky is calling. Brack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Well, this is the case of the creature turned into a monster. The CIA is a creature of Congress. It is not a constitutionally powerful entity. So this is Dr. Feinstein versus the monster out of control. And how dare they respond to her as though the Senate oversight is a spy tool on them? the Senate has a right to pry into any and everything that they do.
They have the right, but they've been given a lot of leash, and that relationship becomes interesting after years. Breck, I appreciate your call. Here's Republican Congressman Mike Rogers from Michigan, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, defending Feinstein to CNN yesterday.
We need to get to the bottom of this soon to make sure that this thing doesn't spill over and stop the agency from being able to do its work. At the same time, we need to make sure that the agency did not break any laws. That would be a pretty horrific situation, and it would destroy that legislative CIA relationship.
Republican Congressman Mike Rogers, and another voice coming into this, even before Feinstein stood up this week, on Monday, Edward Snowden himself, NSA leaker, he spoke from Russia to the South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas, took on this whole issue of congressional oversight of American intelligence. Snowden.
We have an oversight model that could work. The problem is when the overseers aren't interested in oversight, when we've got Senate intelligence committees, House intelligence committees that are cheerleading for the NSA instead of holding them to account. We need public oversight. We need a watchdog that watches Congress.
Watching, watching, watching. Edward Snowden there on Monday. Bill in Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes. I want to make this perfectly clear. I'm a supporter of the president, but I want this entire thing exposed. I want no redactions. I want names named. I want dates dated. I want the entire thing laid entirely opened. I don't want anything excluded. I want the entire thing exposed.
American citizen wants the whole story. Bill,
I want the entire story.
The whole thing, nothing redacted. Appreciate that. But Mark Mazzetti, is that in the Senate Intelligence Committee report? It's a long report with a lot of work in there. Is that the whole story? If we could read that, would we have the whole story of what happened with interrogation, torture after 9/11?
You're certainly going to have a whole lot more of the story than currently exists, and it as they're still working out the details of the report and maybe changing some facts based on the debate with the CIA. What you're going to ultimately have is the most complete history we have so far of this program. I wanted to just make a couple points from what the caller said, and also mm-hmm. I agree with Josh that it's hard to imagine criminal charges being brought on either side on this. I think that
reference. That's what's been referred at this point.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to imagine the Justice Department on either side pursuing criminal cases. I think it's really going to turn on a political story and obviously a very important constitutional story of separation of powers. The other point is that, I mean, I think it's – and one caller talked about the president. The president – through his 5 years in office, has been enormously supportive of the CIA in terms of embracing what the CIA does. You've seen the president try to not only has expanded some of the secret wars the CIA has carried mm-hmm. out in the drone program, but also there's been resistance in the White House to alienate the CIA because of what it had done under the Bush administration. And that was something Josh referenced early on.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. They're resistant to alienating the CIA because
yeah.
of – Oh, you mean, in other words, forgive and forget because we need to work with them. Let's move on.
Exactly. And that's something Josh mentioned earlier, which was when Obama came in, there was this question of do they go hard pursuing criminal investigations into this program or do we do, as Obama ultimately said, turn the page? And the answer came from the White House was turn the page. We need the CIA. Let's not go down that road because you don't want to have the CIA as your enemy. And that's an interesting story of the Obama administration.
It's supposed to work for him, not right. be anybody's enemy here. You hear our caller. He wants the whole story. He may not be alone in that. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the CIA and the Senate Intelligence Committee at war over CIA interrogation, torture, charges of spying on the Senate, trying to intimidate the Senate Intelligence Committee. Josh Gerstein is here, senior White House reporter for Politico. Mark Mazzetti is here, national security correspondent for The New York Times. Done a lot of breakthrough reporting on this whole standoff. Here was the CIA director, John Brennan, on Tuesday telling NBC News, oh, this will all be worked out.
Allegations of, you know, CIA hacking into, you know, Senate computers, nothing could be further from the truth. And, you know, when the facts come out on this, I think a lot of people who are claiming that there has been this tremendous sort of spying and monitoring and hacking will be proved wrong.
But that is not the way Dianne Feinstein was describing it, Senate Intelligence Committee chair on that same day, Tuesday. She said there's intimidation going on here.
There is no legitimate reason to allege to the Justice Department that Senate staff may have committed a crime. I view the acting consul general's referral as a potential effort to intimidate this staff, and I am not taking it lightly.
Mark Mazzetti, take us back to this January 15th meeting where John Brennan sat down with Dianne Feinstein, emergency meeting, and it looked like some real hardball began right here. Is this where the threat of criminal charges came out, Mark?
That's right. So on January 15th, Brennan comes to Congress and meets with Feinstein and Saxby Chambliss, who is the top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee. And what he says is that we've got a problem here. There seems to have been a security breach on our network. And you, the committee, seem to have gotten access to a report that you weren't supposed to get. And that report existed on the other side of this computer firewall. And somehow it's now on your side of the computer firewall. And the CIA did a search of the audit records. We searched the network, and we found out that you guys were in places where you shouldn't have been. That's really where the most recent crisis began. And after that, Senator Feinstein writes a letter to Brennan saying that the fact that you searched the computers is outrageous. It raises all sorts of constitutional questions. And you have this back and forth exchange of letters. At the same time, you have two different investigations beginning. You have the CIA lawyer referring to justice this criminal charge of whether it was a crime that the committee got access to this report. And at the same time, the inspector general refers the criminal charge to the Justice Department about whether it was inappropriate or unlawful for the CIA to search the computers used by the Senate staff. So, yeah, January 15th is a real important start date for this.
Josh Gerstein, in a way, Dianne Feinstein was the one who decided to make all this brilliantly public. I mean, just mean brightly public with her very public speech on the same day that she knew John Brennan would be talking with the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. So he would be out in public. He'd have to respond to this. What's the hardball diplomacy from her side or negotiation from her side going on here? What's the resolution? Have they brought this to a boil now where they all have to back off and release and we'll get to read this because otherwise everybody's keister's on the line?
Well, it is a tremendous escalation. You know, hints that this was going on had been out there for a few weeks. Another senator on the Intelligence Committee, another Democrat, Senator Mark Udall of Colorado, had made some comments at a couple of hearings and had released a letter which kind of provoked reporters around town, including Mark, to start asking people, you know, what is going on here? We understand there's some behind-the-scenes altercation. And I think that what happened was that Feinstein basically wanted to get her version of these facts on the record before she felt the whole situation began to be driven by the way things often are with many Washington stories, background comments and sort of off-the-record suggestions about some misconduct. I mean, to be fair to the CIA here, I think you do have to acknowledge that the Senate and Feinstein are basically admitting that they broke the agreement with the CIA about how this reading room facility would work and what the rules were. They were supposed to have things checked before they took them away from that facility. And in this instance, she's admitting that they didn't. Now, she has a reason for it, as we discussed earlier. earlier. She felt there'd been a history of destruction of records, and indeed there has been. If you think about the videotapes of interrogations that were destroyed, in fact, with the approval of that very lawyer that you've mentioned a couple times, Bob Edinger, who is now the acting general counsel of the CIA. So both sides
approved the destruction of the videotapes of
torture. And so, you know, both sides here may have committed some infraction. I don't know that it was illegal for the Senate staffers to move those documents to a Senate facility, simply because I'm not sure that that kind of thing is actually a crime, but it apparently did violate the agreement with the CIA. And then who knows what else may have happened here that we don't know about. There have been suggestions that maybe things were being leaked to reporters and things along those lines.
Isn't that disturbing in itself? I mean, this was the Senate Intelligence Committee. This wasn't Woodward and Bernstein lurking around in Watergate, sneaking around. You know, these were official oversight representatives, and they thought that they would feel it necessary to maybe sneak this thing out of the CIA's realm and get it into some other safe under the Senate so the CIA wouldn't snatch it away. I mean, how can you call that oversight? They seem afraid of the party that they're trying to or supposed to oversee.
Right. There's no question that as this investigation went forward over the last 5 years or so, there was a tremendous lack of trust that developed here. And the Senate clearly didn't think that the CIA was being cooperative. And, you know, vice versa, the CIA may have felt these Senate staffers were out to get them. There's some interesting kind of partisan alignments that seem to have happened in the last couple of days where people are making clear that it was the Democrats in the Senate Intelligence Committee that were behind what happened here that put these documents where they put them and decided to bring them back. The Republicans
were involved.
Though
there's Lindsey Graham saying Nixon style.
That is, but we'll see whether he sticks by that over time. You know, Chambliss backed away yesterday from some of the things Feinstein had said earlier. They don't seem to want to get into a real fight with Feinstein, but I haven't heard Republicans fully endorse what Feinstein said. Indeed, at least the ones who know the facts, and the only people that know the full facts at this point are probably the Republicans who are on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Mark Mazzetti, what could be in this report that the CIA is so afraid of having come out? Because you know, Americans, to some extent, are inured. They're inoculated already. We've seen the pictures from Abu Ghraib. We've heard all kinds of things. What could be in there that would be so damning or shocking at this point when we've been disabused of our naivete about interrogation for years that the CIA would go to this extent, threatening criminal charges against the Senator's Intelligence Committee?
The CIA's point is that it's not only the conclusions of the report, but there are facts wrong, that there are case studies in the report where the committee just got the wrong guy. They did a whole case study on the wrong person, and so they are trying to correct some of the facts. So that's to the CIA's point. However, there are also fundamental conclusions. Again, the question of how is the history framed of this in the report that the CIA clearly is pushing back against, the idea that the agency was lying throughout the entire time about the efficacy of these techniques. Not only to the people in the field may have been lying to headquarters, the people in headquarters may have been lying to the White House and also to the American public. So I think as much of the facts that there are in dispute, it's how the conclusions are framed. And that's what I think a lot of the dispute is on. And I just wanted to raise one other point about something Josh just said. You know, if the CIA's defense here is that, you know, you took a document that we never intended to give you, that's not the strongest defense in the world when you're talking about, you know, your relationship with your congressional overseers, right? Yeah. I mean, they may have a point that there was a deal, but you know, I don't think
journalists would go for every document they could.
Right. And I mean, this is you don't necessarily want to play that game too many times with the Senate Intelligence Committee about, you know, we gave you some documents. There are others you don't have the right to have. You know, Congress will push back. And I think this is one of these cases, again, going back to just how much oversight or how vigorous the oversight has been. You generally see Congress back down on some of these fights because they realize that they don't have a lot of leverage. You saw Congress put up a fight last year when Brennan was nominated over getting certain memos about targeted killing. In the end, they backed down. They approved Brennan. Congress sometimes doesn't have a lot of leverage. So we'll really see here how many people join Feinstein's fight and ultimately how much and how long the fight goes on that, you know, for Feinstein.
Mark Mazzetti, Josh Gerstein, please stand by. I want to turn to San Francisco, Dianne Feinstein's hometown, and Kim Zetter, senior reporter for Wired. She covers privacy, security, civil liberties. Kim, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You know, there's just overwhelming response here online, all kinds of response, but a lot of it says, hey, Senator Feinstein, welcome to the club. When we have an intelligence community that's spying, it sometimes seems like on everybody, everywhere, all the time. Why do you think you're exempt, Kim?
Right, and that was what Snowden pointed out in his talk on Monday at South by Southwest.
You were there at South by Southwest, yeah.
I was over the weekend, yes. Mm-hmm. He called it the Merkel effect, referring to German Chancellor Angela Merkel, where government officials are outraged when they discover that they might be the target of spying, but of course there's little outrage when ordinary citizens are the target of spying. So, you know, as your guests have been talking about and you've been pointing out, sort of the hypocrisy of the outrage that Feinstein is presenting in this case. She has been an apologist for the intel community for quite a long time. She has supported and defended the phone metadata collection program, and she's really given softball questions in confirmation hearings for intelligence officials. So for the public, who has been learning over the last year of the extent of this massive surveillance, and no reaction from Feinstein about it other than to defend it, you know, for her now to make an issue about something that's fairly minor in comparison. I mean, not fairly minor in the constitutional sense.
But in scale.
Important here. Mm-hmm. Yes, the scale here. You know, it makes people not really supportive of her outrage, I guess, is the point.
I mean, Kim, there you are in San Francisco, sort of Silicon Valley territory, or at South by Southwest Interactive, where you've got so many high-tech people. When they look around at that massive metadata collection and more, maybe that is a kind of an eye roll here from them as well. Senator Feinstein, where were you when these bigger questions, bigger scale revelations were made?
Right, and I want to point out that the phone record collection program has been known since 2006. USA Today broke the story way back then. The telecoms denied it at the time, and it kind of went away. But Congress could have stepped in at that point. Clearly, they knew about it all along and supported it. So, it, you know, there's a real mistrust here, not just of the intelligence communities, but of the, not just of the intelligence agencies, but of the oversight that's being conducted. You know, we also have Wyden saying afterwards that he had concerns about these programs, but never spoke up about them. So, you know, there's a lot of touting of the extensive oversight. They love to talk about this at the confirmation hearings, the extensive oversight that's conducted of these programs, and somehow we're supposed to believe that they are legal and that they have a seal of approval. But now we're finding out, of course, that oversight is quite often rubber stamp.
A couple of callers right here. Sean in Nashville, Tennessee. Sean, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
It just seems to me that this whole oversight, the idea of oversight for the CIA is kind of like a child being monitored by its parent on the Internet. The parent just can't keep up technologically, and anything that they would put in place, firewalls or anything else, the child is eventually going to be able to get around. And, I mean, it's the CIA's job to subvert this kind of technological barrier. I just don't see a way that especially Congress could keep any kind of tabs on that.
The Senate Intelligence Committee is kind of a fuddy-duddy that can't keep up. Maybe, Sean, I know what you mean. One more right here. Paul in West Bend, Wisconsin. Paul, you're on the air.
Thank you. Look, this is a $50 billion-plus shadow government element. And you got the CIA, the NSA, which is probably another $30 billion or more. And this is to protect the image in the world that we are the great white, omnipotent white knight that does no harm in the world. And quite frankly, I don't even think the White House has the capacity to monitor these monsters that are existing below the surface. Thanks.
Paul, I appreciate your call. I mean, Kim, here is this, you know, you think about the big message of this. Is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and she's having trouble overseeing the CIA. What are Americans, what's the world supposed to think about that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is an important point. And, you know, the caller talking about, you know, characterizing the oversight committees as sort of this fuddy-duddy organization, I think that we can't rely on Congress to do this. I think that there's a lot of truth in that Congress doesn't understand the technology, doesn't understand the capabilities of
But if they can't do it, who on earth is going to? And it's a democracy. That's their job on our behalf.
Well, it's their job policy-wise, but, you know, Snowden made this point in his talk. He said that there has to be two responses here. There has to be one, a policy response out of Capitol Hill, but secondly, there has to be a technology response, and I think that the technology community and the public can't wait for Congress to do something that they're incapable of doing.
What's a technology response look like?
A technology response would look like end-to-end encryption. That's one of the things that he pointed out. Currently, right now, if I communicate, for instance, with Google, they are encrypting my communication between my computer and them. But when it gets to Google servers, it gets unencrypted, and then it gets re-encrypted to get sent off to the destination. So there's a point of vulnerability there at the service provider where the intelligence agency can get into it, can get access to it, either through a court order or, as we've discovered, when they want to bypass the courts and just tap into the undersea cables between data centers that Google owns. There's also vulnerability there.
Yeah, there's the global picture. Our time is short. Josh Gerstein, do you anticipate a truce here? Or are these two agencies and Congress, Senate, going to go to the mat?
I think eventually there will be a truce here. You know, the CIA doesn't really like being in public fights over anything, and I think they were somewhat taken aback by Feinstein's broadside on Tuesday, and I think that the two sides will try to come to some resolution, even as the Justice Department pries into these issues.
Mark, 20 seconds. Who's going to blink, and what would a blink be?
Well, I think I do agree with Josh that they're going to try to work something out. Ultimately, though, at the center of this is getting this report out, right? And I think that's ultimately what Feinstein wants. And I think it'll be declassified in some format.
So maybe it's a negotiation over what's in that report when it comes to the public. Maybe that's where the truce is drawn. Wow, what a story. Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent for the New York Times. Thank you for all your reporting, and thank you for being with us today, Mark.
Thanks very much.
Josh Gerstein, senior White House reporter for Politico. Great to have you, Josh. Thanks for your insights.
Thanks, Tom. My pleasure.
And Kim Zetter with Wired Magazine in San Francisco. Thanks for your big perspective, Kim. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.